It's Sunday morning, time for the great outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host on the Great Outdoors here, and I'm calling you from remote location. If you hear some of this in the background, that wakes you all up, I'm sure, at 5 o'clock on a Sunday morning. You're saying, what is going on? I am on location in Sun Valley, Idaho, at the World Cup Final Ski Racing Championship for the skiing world. This is the Super Bowl of skiing. I had the pleasure of watching Michelle Schifrin earlier this week win her downhill race, slalom race, rather, and then Lindsey Vonn, the fabled American skier who's been hurt for 2 years, came out of nowhere to finish second in the giant slalom. So it's the first time in over 50 years America has the World Cup finals have been on U.S. soil. It's a big deal if you like to downhill ski. My guest this morning has nothing to do with downhill skiing. In fact, I think he abhors downhill skiing. Having grown up in Wisconsin and gone to Wilmot and all those famous Wisconsin mountains, Chris Dorsey, who you've heard many times in the Great Outdoor Show. Chris, you get as far away from snow unless it's hunting as far as I can tell, and I think you're sequestered in the quail woods of South Carolina as we talk.
I am. You know, once upon a time, I used to be a cross-country skier up in the great north country of Wisconsin, but not anymore.
Well, you know, it's a wonderful thing that Illinois and Wisconsin can get together on the Great Outdoor Show, you being a fabled member of the Cheesehead State, and of course, we're being here at WGN Radio in Chicago, so we do get together occasionally, and I can guarantee you, Chris, neither you nor I can ski the way these skiers ski. It is something else, and they, you may know, they bake the ski slope with ice. It's not snow. They're skiing on ice. Something else I don't want to do. But anyway, Chris, we have a lot to talk about this morning. And on the Great Outdoor Show, we cover everything. We used to cover it with Buddy Melgus and sailboat racing and, of course, skiing today. But you have something really important to talk about, and that is what's happening and what seems to be a growing momentum. And by the way, Chris Dorsey, of course, is well known for Dorsey Pictures and all of his shows on Sporting Classics and Forbes magazine. Without a doubt, the most well-known cinematographer and TV showmaker of the great outdoors and other genres in America. And also, Chris, I know you're going to touch at the end. You're working on IMAX movies, which is pretty exciting. But what is going on in the outdoor world that has all these states and provinces saying, we don't want to see you if you're not from here?
Well, I think as much as anything, Charlie, and it's a big story that's brewing out there. It's really a money grab by a lot of states that see non-residents as the cash cow. And they, of course, they've been raising. This isn't really a new story. It's just that there's a lot more acceleration to what's happening now. Utah just literally doubled their hunting fees. They went, for instance, an elk tag from $830 to $1,660. And that was a move by the legislature. And in Kansas, they're trying to limit non-resident waterfowl hunters to 3 days, Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. And just generally, fees across, especially the West, are really increasing dramatically for hunting fees. And what's really interesting about it is so much of the West, as you know, is in federal land. So these are lands that are paid for by taxpayers across the country, not the residents of that state entirely. And yet they're in some cases either not allowed to go because they limit the number of non-residents who can come in the first place, or they just charge much, much higher fees to come out of these federal lands, which the states don't even manage. And don't spend any money managing the federal lands, yet they're charging more fees to hunt on that federal property, which everybody in the country is paying for. So it's an inflection point right now. It'll be interesting to see how it shakes out.
Well, and you've been in the middle of this for a lot of years, and we've talked about it with you on the Great Outdoor Show before. And yet there's this real sentiment. Forget the money for a second. There's this real sentiment that non-residents aren't welcome. You've got Manitoba with restrictions, South Dakota, North Dakota. You've got Arkansas. You can't hunt on public lands, you know, except Wednesdays, Sundays, I think, and Mondays if you're in Arkansas. And you just said, so let's address that for a second. Why do you think this really relatively new surge, South Dakota's had it for a long time, but the rest of them haven't, to try to limit non-resident hunters, whether you're an elk hunter or whether you're a duck hunter or a pheasant hunter. What is happening that suddenly we're getting this groundswell across the country of don't come here?
Well, I mean, it's a lot of residents that are saying, look, we're having a hard time getting access to our favorite hunting holes. These places in some cases are being leased out to non-residents. And so it's just sort of a kind of a wave, kind of a backlash against the non-residents. But when you look at where the funding for these state agencies come from, it's very significantly the non-residents. In Wyoming, for instance, in 2020, they sold $56 million worth of licenses. $43 million of that came from non-residents. And that's just kind of typical across much of the West. It's really the non-residents that are footing the bill for so much of the hunting. And not only that, but when the non-residents come in, they're staying at hotels, they're hiring guides, they're going to gas stations, they're pumping money into the economy that's additive to the population of the state. So it's a real economic question for a lot of these states. But the resident hunters in some cases, and some of it's rightly, some of it's justified, have said enough. You know, we've got too many folks in here, and we don't want to run off the resident hunters. So it's a real quandary for a lot of these states to kind of balance that need for more income to do more management with the kind of the demands and needs of their own resident hunters.
So you have a situation 2 years ago, Manitoba, which you came on the air and we talked about it, put in restrictions for the first time on non-residents. And what's the result? Now the lodges and restaurants and car rentals and everyone you've just mentioned are saying, wait a minute, our hunting, it appears that non-resident licenses in Manitoba are down like 30% or more. And now they're saying, you're killing our economy. These local, you know, these rural communities from the Paw down to Bois de Vaine and all over Manitoba are not having any hunters come because of the restrictions. And they're pushing back for the first time against these restrictions on non-residents. Do you think that will continue across the country, or is the local ballot box? I mean, in Montana last year, they tried to restrict residents of the state from hunting in the eastern part of the state during certain weeks because they didn't want people from Bozeman and Butte and all that coming east. Where does the blowback come from?
Well, I think it'll be interesting to see how the states react, right? I mean, are they going to respond to the locals, the residents of their state? Or are they going to continue to raise the fees on the non-residents to generate more revenue for their state coffers, for their management programs, et cetera? I think what's really interesting about this, and Manitoba is kind of its own case, but a lot of crown land up there as well. But when you look at Western states like Montana, 1/3 of the state of Montana is federal land. In Colorado, it's 36% of the state, 24 million acres. In Utah, it's 37 million acres are federally managed. That's 68% of the land mass. That's the size that's actually larger than Illinois, the entire state of Illinois. Nevada, it's 56 million acres of federal land, 80% of the state. So I think when you're talking about federal lands that are paid for by general taxpayer dollars, and you're somehow limiting, you know, access to those lands by non-residents, or you're charging exorbitant fees for lands that have essentially been paid for by taxpayers around the country, it's really kind of a case of taxation without representation. And I don't know how long this lasts. I don't know how long, you know, you have congressional delegations that say, wait a minute, you know, if these states are going to be hostile to non-residents, and I'm an Eastern state congressman, I'm going to start talking about introducing legislation that says, let's limit Pittman-Robertson funds to those states that are perceived as hostile to non-residents. We have ways to change this dynamic. And this all goes back, Charlie, to a 1981 Supreme Court ruling. It was Montana versus the United States, and basically just affirmed states' rights to manage wildlife within their territory, even though it's on federal lands. And the federal government had no authority by virtue of this 81 Supreme Court ruling to change any kind of management or legislation relative to how the wildlife is managed on those federal lands.
Let's take a quick break, and I want to come back to this. And Chris, you're going to hear something that's in the background. That means the races in Sun Valley are going to start once the sun comes up at the World Cup here. I'll be back with Chris Dorsey. And Chris, when we come back, I want to drill down here because you're asking a great question. Is this even legal? This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN. And first, a message from our longtime sponsors, the Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
Hiking, camping, and hunting, it's all an adventure in the great outdoors, but nature can be tough. You need to be ready for anything and everything. Chevy Silverado is built to handle the toughest conditions and get you everywhere you want to go, worry-free. Silverado's designed to handle the big jobs. It's built for the great outdoors. With over 13,000 pounds of towing capacity and trailering sway control, Silverado can haul the biggest loads on the roughest roads and keep you cool as a Sunday drive. With 8 available cameras and up to 14 different views, it can spot trouble before it gets to you. That's peace of mind. And when you're ready for the backcountry, Chevy Silverado 1500 ZR2 owns the off-road. You name it, we run over it. No wonder it's Motor Trend's 2023 four-wheeler pickup truck of the year. So see your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and check out a Chevy Silverado. It's freedom to explore the great outdoors.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. No cowbells on the welcome back here. Those passersby have gone down the street here in the World Cup in Sun Valley, Idaho, where it's still dark. But Chris Dorsey's definitely got daylight, and he's talking about the constitutionality, in a way, of what is happening about states limiting non-resident access to federal lands. And Chris, before the break, and I'm asking you just review for a second, we talked about the case in Montana 45 plus years ago, I guess, that went to the Supreme Court. And I know you even had a conversation, I believe, with Justice Scalia about it at some point. So where did this come from, and where do you think it goes? And do you think Congress will actually, as you suggested a moment ago, step in and say, hey, look, if you're not welcoming a hunter from Illinois, we might not want to send so much federal money your way.
Well, I think those are all sort of the outcomes that are possible, and the ramifications of a continuation of states continuing to sort of gouge and raise these fees on non-resident hunters, I think it's come to an inflection point. I think there's a lot of maneuvering, even though you've got the 81 Supreme Court ruling that says the states have the authority to manage their wildlife, to set license fees, et cetera, within their jurisdiction. That doesn't mean there aren't other outcomes that can come down the pike through legislative means, through other legal maneuvering, et cetera. So I don't know that this is really settled. I think if you continue to see this kind of rancor and pitting residents versus non-residents, state versus state, that somehow the courts will get involved in this. So it'll be real interesting to see. But it's, to me, if you're a resident of Chicago and you're paying federal income tax, significant federal income tax, you've got as much claim on a federal property in Montana as a resident of Montana does, quite frankly. And it's interesting about Montana. I looked up the numbers on this. The average income is $38,000 a year in the state of Montana. And there's a big chunk that's the 16th poorest state in America. So there's a big chunk of the population of Montana that is either paying little to no federal income tax whatsoever. So if you're in Boston, if you're in Chicago, if you're in Detroit, and you're paying a significant amount of money into the federal tax rolls, you've got a greater claim on that federal land in the state of Montana than a Montana resident does if you look at the financial contribution into it. So it's a weird dynamic that you've got these non-residents going on federal land that they've helped pay for, and yet they're still having 10 times the fees in some cases that residents are paying. So it's a tough balance between the residents that are fed up with not having a place to go, which is kind of interesting when you're looking at these Western states, because there's so much federal land, it's hard to imagine they don't have a place to go. But anyway, that's the debate. That's the narrative. And just because of the 81 Supreme Court ruling, I still don't think this is settled. I still think there will be a lot of legal maneuvering, possibly legislative reaction to this. And what if one state says, you know, a state senator in one state says, I'm going to introduce legislation because Montana is charging too much up there. Therefore, any Montana resident that wants to come to my state is going to pay the same amount, blah, blah, blah. And then you've got this cascade of legal maneuvering, legislative maneuvering that can come from all this. So it's going to be a real interesting story to watch. But and then you look at the Pittman-Robertson dollars flowing to these Western states. Montana gets $31 million a year, Colorado $32 million, Utah $23 million, Nevada $22 million. So if an Eastern legislative group says, look, if they're hostile to non-residents, we're going to start stifling the amount of federal money they get through the PR income. So that's all stuff I think that'll be on the table.
Well, there's a lot to digest there, Chris, and I thank you very much for that. We've got about a minute and a half left, and I have to shift gears because you announced this past week that a producer has been selected for the upcoming IMAX film in Louisiana, and I know you're also moving quickly towards a big announcement on the Everglades. You want to take the next 60 seconds or so to tell us what's up?
Well, you know, it's fun. This Mission Partners Entertainment Group, working with Max McGraw Wildlife Foundation, Ducks Unlimited, et cetera, really trying to move the needle in understanding conservation in America and understanding our role as citizens, as individuals in that conservation narrative. And, you know, as we've talked about many times, there's really a lack of conservation education in the country. We just think these giant screen IMAX films, combined with the educational platforms that we have and massive reach in 10,000 schools, really is a great way to move the needle so people do have an understanding, so that we get good public policy down the road from people that actually know what they're talking about relative to the environment.
So just for a second on Louisiana, because that's the announcement this week, tell us 30 seconds what's happening there.
Well, we've picked a terrific producer, Ian Shive. He's an award-winning cinematographer, Ansel Adams Award winner, done multiple giant screen films, really loves that region. He's spent a lot of time down there, has done a lot of work with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. But it's really a chance to tell a story about what's happening to coastal Louisiana and Texas. And it's not necessarily a positive story, but it's got some hopeful outcomes if we do some positive things. But the film is really designed to celebrate this ecosystem as well as the people and the culture surrounding it, which is an amazing area, incredibly valuable to the economy, of course, of the country, but especially to the region.
Well, Chris, thank you. And if you want to follow Chris out, Chris Dorsey, you can, Sporting Classics Television, also on Forbes Magazine. And Chris, you're always a wealth of information, and thank you for your efforts for the conservation arena. And as I sign off, the bells for racing are about to begin. Thanks for listening on The Great Outdoors Show. I'll be back next Sunday with much more on The Great Outdoors. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.